Tasyadhikarino bhavanti.
Tatvavivekaha.
Atma satyah. Atma satyah. Tadanyat. Sarvam. Mityeti.
Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Can you chant from the Tattva Vivekaha Kaha through the page 12, the definition of the stula sutra karana sharira, that whole little paragraph?
Tattva Vivekaha Kaha.
Tattva Vivekaha Kaha.
Atma Satyaha.
Atma Satyaha.
Saranyat
sarvam
mityeti
atma kaha
stula
stula
sukshma
karana
sharira
yatiriktaha panchakoshatitaha
sannavastatrayasakshi
sachidanandasvarupaha
san
yaha
tishtati
Sa-atma.
So in this Tattva Vivekaha, what is the Tattva Viveka? The first statement is really a shastric. Atma, the self. The self is satyaha. So what is the Viveka? That the self is satya. Is the reality, is that which is free of all three periods of time. Tad anyat sarvam, everything else is mitya. Okay. Iti. That's the Tattva Viveka. This Tattva Viveka is tricky. It's tricky because yourself, the Atma, is not completely unknown. It's only as half unknown, half and half, 50-50. You know yourself as a conscious being. I am a conscious being. That is who you are, actually. But you don't know that this conscious being that you are is actually Brahman, is actually infinite, is actually the self of the whole creation. That part you don't know. Even I can say like this, that the ignorance is quite a bit. I know I am a conscious being. That is true. That is the nature of the Atma. Sat Chit. I know I'm a conscious being. The limitless part I don't know. I know I'm a conscious being and that you are a conscious being. That's two. So there are two conscious beings. There are three conscious beings. There are a countless number of conscious beings. There are little conscious beings and big conscious beings. There's this limited conscious being as a human being, and the limitless conscious being is Ishwara, if we recognize Ishwara as the limitless conscious being. So, also, this conscious being that I am is this body. This body is finite. It's subject to birth and death. It's subject to disease. It's subject to its own set of limitations and vibhutis, you know, glories, the things that are wonderful about it, and the things that are very limiting about it, and you have your own set of limitations and vibhutis. That is me. So now, when we were discussing mithya, you can see how strong this mistake is. It's how strong the recognition of myself as a conscious being, who is this physical body, and then I could say, who is this physical body, who is this body, mind, sense organs, this jiva here, this body, mind, sense organs, how strong that identity is, because there is no separation between mithya and satyam. We use the relative examples of the desk and the shirt. What is the separation between the desk and the wood? Do we have desk over here and wood over here? No, in fact, the desk is the wood. The desk's self-experience, we can talk like that, and using an example, the desk's self-experience is the wood. The desk can say, I am the wood. I am wood. And it is correct. It is wood. No mistake, it is wood. The shirt can say, I am the fabric. And it's true. The fabric can say, I am the yarn. That is true. The yarn can say, I am the threads. That is true. No mistake. And so that your mind, body, mind, sense organs, could take yourself, take your body, mind, sense organs to be the self, to be the Atma, no mistake, it is the self. Your self-experience, the body's mind, sense, organ, self-experience is the self-experience, which is the Atma, which is the self-experience. This is taking it one step further. We have to, of course, establish all of this, but nevertheless, if you understand the satyam mithya, now we can say the self-experience of this body, mind, sense, organs is Brahman. That means, as we start to really understand these words, the self-experience of my Atma, of myself, of this self, this I, this me that I experience as myself, which is myself, that self is in fact Brahman, is in fact the self in all beings. I do not have a limited experience of myself. Like, for instance, say I take my mind, of this body, mind, sense organs, and I say my experience of the world is through my sense organs and mind, and my mind is limited, your mind is limited, your mind is limited. So if I have an experience through my sense organs, that experience that I'm having is definitely limited. The mind is limited, the sense organs are limited, and the sphere which those sense organs are going out and embracing is limited. So the mind will always have a limited experience because it itself is limited. My mind is different from yours. It takes up, it exists within time and space. Everybody clear on that? Yeah. Then, of course, my mind's experience of the limitless self is also limited. You know why? Because if I have a mirror, for instance, representing the mind, and I hold the mirror up to all-pervasive limitless space, all-pervasive space, my experience of the space is true, but it's a limited experience of the space because the mind is limited. So the limited mind has a limited experience of the space, right? Whereas this Ishvara has a limitless mind, Ishvara has the experience of the same space, but because of a limitless mind, he gets to experience the limitless space, the Brahman which is limitless. So actually, we all have a different experience of the same limitless space, because space is homogeneous and space on the right side is the same as space on the left side. And so even though you're having this little experience of space from your limited mind, it is the experience of the whole space because there's no difference in the space. Nevertheless, it's limited. Wouldn't this be a natural way to think? Because limited mind will have only a limited vritti. That's true. It doesn't have the Ishvara vritti. So to say that I am Brahman is would be false. You would have to say Brahman is infinite, but it's homogeneous. It's at every point it's exactly the same. And so even though really I only have a little square experience, a little mental experience of Brahman, it's still the exact same experience of Brahman that Ishvara is having as an infinite mind. Because it's the same at every point. Say if we think like that. If we think like that, then we have to say that this Atma, this self that I am, that I experience as myself, you know, is bound by time and space. It exists within time and space. There's all-pervasive space. And within that all-pervasive space, there is all-pervasive Atma. So now we think of Atma, the self, as all-pervasive. But actually, the self is not all-pervasive. It's non-dual. Non-dual means that there is nothing that is not me. So these are the things, these are all the little confusions we're going to have to be working through. Non-dual means one without a second. One without a second means, from that standpoint of me, there is no time and space. In fact, when you have a dream, time and space comes with the dream. Right? If you have a dream, it's not like there's some existing infinite space, you know, all-pervasive space, and the dream comes within that space. There's me, all-pervasive me, all-pervasive space, and then the dream pops in there. But that isn't true. When you have a dream or you have an imagination, the space, the time, the objectivity, the subject knower known relationship, all of that is part of the dream. So space and time come along with the dream because space is an element. It's one of the five elements. And time requires change. There is no time without change. There has to be a marking of change for there to be time. So time must exist within duality, right? Duality exists within the creation. So the concept of space and time itself are objectifiable. You can be without the experience of space just by closing your eyes. You know, in terms of physical space, if I close my eyes, all of a sudden these nama rupas are gone and the experience of space is gone. In deep sleep, there is no experience of space. Yeah. If I get really technical, I close my eyes, I still have an experience of space through the sense of touch, you know, through the sense of sound. The five sense organs give me the experience of dimension and space. But if I can just use as a drishtanta, as an illustration, the difference between open eyes and closed eyes, when you close your eyes, a lot of things are immediately not in your experience, including space, the objectification of space through the eyes. See what I mean? And so, what this means is now, myself, I don't experience my own being, really, as anything spatial or anything bound by time. I always am, but I don't think of it like that. It's just that it's not part of my experience. My self-experience doesn't include time or space or objectification. It doesn't include the world. It doesn't include name and form. It doesn't even include nor known. I know this, subject-object differentiation. All of that exists within this creation. So if my experience of know or known, for instance, was a constant, that was my swarupa, you know, then that subject-object differentiation would always be with me, even in deep sleep. Whereas if the subject-object differentiation, see or seen, hear or heard, belongs to the mind, for instance, to the mind and sense organs, when there's deep sleep, then of course, this subject-object differentiation is not going to be there because the mind is in its causal condition. So, I'm just giving you a little hint of all of the things that we have to really thoroughly analyze in this differentiation between satya and mitya. So when we say, what is the atma? What exactly do we mean is the nature of myself? When I say atma, the shastra says atma is satya. I have to know what is the self, you know, and how is it that it is satyam? Trikala abhadita satyam. How is it that my being is satyam? Paramartika satyam. Is free from all periods of time. You know, is not subject to past, present, or future. In order to understand that, I have to be able to differentiate myself from what falls under the qualification of mitya. Because that is the problem. Two things are mixed up here. I take myself to be this physical body. I am here. It's not like I'm out here somewhere. I am here and the physical body are here in the same period of time, like the desk in the wood. So I am here, this physical body is here, this physical body is mitya. We see the physical body is mitya. It means what? Mitya. It requires an adhishtana, it requires something which is satyam in order for it to exist. Its existence is totally dependent upon something other than it that can be differentiated from it. Now in this satyam mitya, so I'm going, coming, pulling in the reins here. So in this satyam mitya relationship, the mitya, whatever is mitya, right, is the satyam. The desk is the wood. There is no desk at all apart from the wood. Zero. The desk is the wood. But the wood is free of the desk. I can take the desk apart and then have the pile of wood. Same wood. Wood is wood. I can reorganize the pieces of wood. I can saw them and make something else. I could make a chair out of it or a table out of it, or I can make a little stand out of it. The wood remains the wood. Wood doesn't modify to become whatever the mitya is, because the mitya, what is mitya, is nothing but the wood. How can the mitya desk change or alter the wood? Because the mitya desk is nothing but the wood. Right? So it has no capacity to do anything but to the wood, because it is only wood. That's our problem here. I am, at the bottom line, as we go through this process of discrimination of viveka, I am only the self. None of this has any independent being apart from me. So how can the mind, my mind, not think that I, the mind, am the self? Or that I, this mind body, am the self? It can't not think that, because it is the self. You know? It is the self. But what it doesn't know, and this is where the ajnanam comes in, it doesn't know that myself is free from the mind, free from the body, free from whatever is mitya. It's a different order of reality. The mitya cannot cross over into the satyam. It's like your mitya imagination can't alter The satyam, now relatively speaking, the mithya imagination, cannot alter myself. It can't alter my mistaken self. Taking myself to be the body, I have this mithya imagination that I've traveled. It's just a wonderful imagination. I've traveled to India. I've visited my teacher. I'm living at the ashram there, which I just love. There I am. Okay, I'm finally there. And then I open my eyes. Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to be there. You don't think that. You're very comfortable with this wonderful imaginal faculties that you have, with the mind that you have. You're very comfortable with it being something which is mithya. Even though you won't use that word, but you're comfortable with the mithyatva of it because you know very well that you can imagine anything, go anywhere, do anything, have any kind of a dream whatsoever, wake up from the dream, and you either are, oh darn, I wish that would have continued, or you feel, oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness it was only a dream. You know, like if you had your purse stolen in the dream or something. Such a relief when you wake up. So, when you're in the dream, there can be a problem. It's so real. Yeah. When you wake up from the dream, you realize the dream is a different order of reality that has not touched you in any way. That's why we use and often talk about this dream drishtanta, just this illustration of the dream, which is a little more than a drishtanta because it actually, from its own standpoint, also has this satya-mitya relationship in terms of yourself. But I'm just asking you now, if you're a dreamer, just to notice this one thing that's very nice to notice. When you wake up from the dream, in spite of the total absence of that dream now, when you wake up from it, nothing has happened. There has been no loss. There's not a loss of yourself, and there's not a loss of the dream either. It's weird. It's a wonderful experience just to recognize that fact that there is no loss. And it's not just there is no loss. It's more of a sensation that nothing has happened. Because nothing has happened to what is actually there, to that which is satyam. So to really understand satyam, one of the first things, that the atma is satyam, you have to understand these two different realities between what is satyam and what is mithya. What is mithya, anything that is mithya, which is everything that exists in this world, we have to analyze it as such. We have to say, this is mithya, and prove that it is mithya. And then you have to understand the relationship between satyam and mithya, both in relationship to the creation and relationship to your body, mind, sense organs. To understand this, to be able to give this order of reality, this mithyatva order of reality to the whole of creation, is perhaps easier than giving that order of satyam mithya, that differentiation of these orders of reality, that I myself am satyam and all of this body, mind, sense organs is mithya. That's a little bit more difficult. And the reason for that is, when I'm experiencing this world through my sense organs, everything external to my skin actually, right, belongs to the world, not to me. So there's a dividing line between my sense of self and the world. And that dividing line is my skin, right? And so when I'm analyzing the world as mithya, like say I analyze the desk as mithya, you know, and realize that the truth is the wood, there's nothing threatening about that. It's an obvious. But when I analyze my body in reference to myself, this is mithya and I am satyam. When this is relegated to mithya, when my sense organs are relegated to mithya, my thoughts are relegated to mithya, my buddhi is relegated to mithya, my relationships are relegated to mithya, the ahankara, because I remember this happening to me in Swamiji in Rishikesh actually, When everything, including the I notion, was relegated to this mitya, my mind was kind of blown, and it was just so subtle, it was so quiet, and I was walking around as though, because it had been put into such a state of shock by that unfoldment, that I was kind of walking around without any thoughts at all, not even any ahankar, just kind of walking around with my sense organs open. Like almost a no-mind state, except experiencing this world without any ahankar, because it had just been blown off completely. And I remember just taking a walk, you know, along the Ganga from Swamiji's ashram, which was covered by just fields at that time. So I took a walk up the Ganga. And the impact of this class slowly started to wear off. And then my ahankara, that I notion, I am this person, just freaked out. What do you mean? And I remember kind of being shaken up, and I remember kind of crying and being so worried about it and all of this, because I, the me, was being dismissed. Who I actually am was being dismissed. Killed off. I was being killed off. That was kind of the experience. It was very, very threatening. Now, why would I have an experience like that? Well, it's because the desk is the wood. The ahankara, the truth of the I notion, the ahankara, the me, is Brahman, is the self. The truth of the mind is the self, is me. The truth of the body is me. And so, of course, the body, mind, sense organs takes itself to be me. Its knowledge is the body is me and I am the body, right? The body is me and I am the body. That identity is very, very firm. And so now you're trying to take away what is actually me. And you know what? I am more attached to me than some Brahman. Way more. I am more attached to me than some transmigrating jiva. If I am the one transmigrating, like going on a trip, I am going, that's fine. If I am the one that is Brahman, that's fine. But now you're negating me. Because this agnanam, this self-ignorance, which causes this mutual superimposition, is beginningless. And so from the standpoint, the one who suffers from the ignorance, the one who suffers from this ignorance is not the self. You know, like, say you have a dream, and in the dream, as the conscious being, you're walking around and you're doing all kinds of things, right? And so from your standpoint, you are the one walking around doing all of these things, engaged in all of these relationships. That's who you are. There is a total mutual superimposition between you, the one from whom the dream has come, who is the self of the entire dream and everything in it, and all of these little sukshma shariras, all of these individuals that have body, mind, sense organs roaming around in the dream. There's a total superimposition between that mind, which reflects me, reflects me completely as long as it is there, and me. There's a total superimposition. You know? And so, there's two things happening there. From the standpoint of these little dream characters, I am the little dream character. Because that is its experience. And the question, great question is, why shouldn't it be its experience? Because that experience is true. It's completely true from its own standpoint. Why shouldn't I think that I am the conscious being speaking from my mind? How can you tell me I'm not the conscious being? Of course I'm the conscious being. How can you say that I'm not? And you're trying to shove something else on me. So this is the threat in the satya mitya understanding until we really get it, because it is that I kind of jokingly say it is 50% true, but it's that other 50% that causes all the problem, you know. Like we often use, and I think it's in chapter 10 of Panchadashi, the actor on the stage, you know. Swamiji will always tell elaborate story of, say you're an actor, actress, and you're playing a role, you know. You're the king or the queen in the play, you know. And so you dress up and get all the proper clothes on, and you have all of your lines, and you strut out onto the stage as the queen or as the king, you know. And all the other actors, they're all playing their roles too, and they all treat you as the king or the queen. And so in this maya, you know, that actor is the king or the queen or whatever the role is. And then when you come off the stage, you take off the garb, you take off the makeup, you say, hey, you did a good job. I really like the way you delivered that line. Everything's fine. You all leave happily, having given up the role. Right? No problem. And just imagine coming off the stage as the queen. And you just stay the queen. That's a big problem. It doesn't work in the society you're walking around as the queen or the king, and everybody just thinks you're a mad person, right? You're a mad person, and we have to do something with this poor person. Something has happened. Mm-hmm. Something bad has happened here. Mm-hmm. There's been something clicked off in their brain, you know, and they really believe that they're the queen and the king. So they need to be taken to a mental institution. Mm-hmm. They need therapy. Okay. But now, in our situation, there is no walking off the stage for us. We're all in the same play. All beings are in the same play. We're all wearing the costume and believing in the costume, whatever it is. That's who we are. So if we think we're in a play, that play is never ending. You're not walking. It's not like you walk off the stage and you just remain the queen or remain as whatever role you happen to be playing. You do that. And so does the rest of the world. You know? The rest of the world does it too. So these roles that we're playing are validated by all the other actors who have the same problem. They all have the same problem. Now what happens is, just to extend the story just for fun, just a little farther. What if somebody, some guru comes along and you become like a mumukshu, and you end up gaining this knowledge that actually, you know, you're not this. This is not who you are. You're the actor, the one who is playing that role. You're somebody else, really, you know? And you realize that for everybody. You're somebody else, really. You're taking yourself to be this, but you're not that. You're taking yourself to be this, you're not that. I promise you, you're not that. Okay? So what if I needed to tell everybody this? And you were right. You're not that. You take yourself to be mortal, you take yourself to be a man or a woman, you take yourself to be smart or stupid, you take yourself to be all of these qualities and relationships, you're so convinced of it, it's a huge problem. You take yourself to be born, you're going to die. You take yourself to be miserable and sometimes happy. You're on the roller coaster ride of life. This is all wrong, I promise you, everybody. This is not true. This is not true. That's what we... That's usually what we call a convert. Mm-hmm. When I first got this knowledge, I felt like, this is so amazing. Everybody should know this. Everybody should know this. I couldn't wait to get home and tell all of my friends, because we kind of had a pact together that if somebody finds any way out of this mess that we're in, you have to come back. We all promised. It was like a club. We all made the promise. And I was so happy to have found this magic key, you know, this key that unlocked this problem. And I called all my friends together, and I remember we had at one of my friend's house, we all got together, because I hadn't been home for a few years. And I started telling them. I was so excited. And really, I was like the person who walked off the stage. It blew my mind. It took me a while to settle down. And it blew my mind. They were just humoring me, waiting for me to settle down so that we could have a good time together. It's kind of embarrassing, you know. Later on, it took me a little while really to understand. It's not that I hadn't been taught about Mumukshu Twam and all of this, but this is so powerful and it was so freeing, it was so wonderful. And I thought my friends were just like me and that this knowledge would just explode in their brains like it exploded for me. And they would be so happy, you know. But when that did not happen at all, not for one single person, you know, that was very, very humbling. And also, that is exactly what's there in the whole Shastra. The ones that will be interested in this knowledge, Bhagavan says, you don't worry about that. Don't worry about the world again. Don't worry about it. Just settle down. Okay, settle down. And for any and every mumukshu, they will find their teacher. That is my responsibility. The laws of Dharma, when a person is a mumukshu, they will get their teacher. If you are a teacher, then whoever are your students, they will come to you. The other person is a teacher, they will get their students. Whoever is the best fit. It has to do with the mumukshu and the needs of the mumukshu, but they will get their teacher. So you just relax. And that's something that needs, that's very humbling, that's very important. That's something that all of us, and myself, really had to realize to be able to let Bhagavan take care of all of the, you know, countless number of jivas, that they, every jiva, gets exactly what they need. Punya and Papa, they get exactly what they need for their growth. For what they need. They are, every jiva in the creation is controlled by Dharma Adharma. You can say human being, we'll talk about animals later. Every human being, devata, everybody that has a mind that has self, reflects the self, you know, is self, what you call self-reflective. You know, they will get what they need for their own growth and their own maturity. Now get what they need and what is right for them at that time. And when they become a mumukshu, they will get their teacher. You know, and that is understanding that the Ishwara is so very freeing. You know, because it's Ishwara's responsibility, not the jiva's responsibility. It's your responsibility as a mumukshu. It's not even a responsibility because you can't really help being a mumukshu. That being a mumukshu will bring you to the teacher, to the teaching. And so being true to the teaching, well, on the side of the teacher, being true to that teaching, which cannot not be done if that teaching is there correctly. Let Ishwara take care of it. So this little story started from how can... In terms of the play, it's very easy when you come off the set, you take on your role as the actor that you were before you went on the set with your costume. But here that's not quite our situation because everyone is playing a role and nobody knows that they're supposed to come out of that role. You know? And so you're a sole little mumukshu or jnani, you know, and say, as a jnani, you have self-knowledge, it's so wonderful, it's so freeing, let's get everybody out of their role. Let's just take off all of the roles. And you have to remember, gosh, when that happened to me, and I realized I was not, that I was not the costume, you know, and Swamiji was trying to tell me that, my mind freaked out. So how do you think everybody's going to feel? Hey, listen, you're not who you think you are. What? Because the Satya Mitya identity is 100%. 100%. It's not like there's a little piece of Mitya that's apart from the Satyam. There isn't. And so your body, mind, sense, organs is you. But what takes time to unfold and unveil is that you, the self that you are, is free of that, of the Mitya. The Mitya, 100%, depends upon you, but you don't depend upon it in any way. But that doesn't make this body, mind, sense organs less you, because it is 100% you. See what I mean? So, we don't have a problem with this in terms of the external world outside of my skin, and so I don't have to prove to you that I, you know, or to prove to you that you are not the air, or that you are not this room, or that you are not me in terms of this physical body. We don't have to have any, there's no need for viveka there. Right? But there is a need for viveka in terms of my body, mind, sense organs, and me. And so here in this verse, we have to do a viveka in reference to where this mistake, satya mitya mistake, is committed. Where are the places that cause me to take, what is it that I take to be me? What is it that I just naturally assume because beginningless ignorance of this is me? So there's teaching a list of actual, what we call in this verse that we're going to go through in a second. There's a list of prakriyas here. These are some of the main prakriyas, the main teaching methodologies that the student has to go through very, very thoroughly in order to be able to do this differentiation without any doubt, the analysis, the viveka. The viveka means a discriminative analysis between the things I take to be my body, between myself and myself. Recognizing the body, mind, sense organs is me, but that it is mitya. It is me, but it is mitya. The desk is the desk, but it is mitya, right? It's a desk. We experience it, but it is really wood. So I have to experience this body, mind, sense organs. Yes, it is me, but actually I am completely free from it. And that's the viveka that has to happen. So here, a list of prakriyas are given. And we're just going to go through this list here. I'll translate it, say a few words about each one. And then, of course, in the style of Tetrabodha, it will take each one of these separately. Okay, and we'll go through it, analyze it separately. So repeat after me. Stula.
Stula.
Sukshma.
Sukshma.
Karana.
Karana.
Sharirat.
Sharirat.
Vyatiriktaha.
Vyatiriktaha.
So vyatiriktaha, now at the very bottom it's going to say, that is the Atma, Saha Atma, that is the Atma, which is, reading this compound, a compound and a word backwards, that Atma, that self, is Vyatiriktaha. It is separate. It is different than. It is other than. Vyatiriktaha Atma. The Atma is Vyatiriktaha. Now that Sharirat, Stula, Sukshma, Karana, Sharirat. Sharira is the body, the Sharira. But there are considered three bodies. That this person here is comprised of three bodies. The Stula Sharira. Stula means gross, the gross body. The body that you're identified with in the waking state. Stula means gross or physical. So this physical body is called the Stula Sharira. So the Atma is other than, different than, as we have to has to be differentiated from this physical body, this one that I experience here, stula sharira. This Atma has to be differentiated from the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. The subtle body is the one that transmigrates. So we're going to have to, after, as soon as we go through this, it'll say stula shariram kim. What is the stula sharira? We have to go through that in detail. Next one will be, what is the sukshma sharira? What is the, what do we mean by subtle body? Then karana sharira, the causal body. What is the causal body? So the Atma is the one who is different, distinct from the physical body, the subtle body, and the causal body. So these words come all the time. Stula, sukshma, karana, sharira, vyatiriktaha. The one that is separate from the stula, the sukshma, and the karana, sharira. Physical, subtle, causal body. This stula, sukshma, karana, sharira, vyatiriktaha is a prakriya. This is a teaching methodology. There's a teaching methodology that addresses this viveka. Vyatiriktaha means there's a viveka. There's something to be differentiated between these three that are taken to be one. Okay? So we have to be exposed to this teaching methodology, this prakriya. It's a pramana. It's a means of knowledge that the Shastra uses. This is the teaching methodology. So we have to go into that. The next one, prakriya, teaching methodology, the first, pancha, kosha, atitaha. Atitaha means that which is beyond, separate from, differentiated from the five koshas. The five, pancha means five, kosha means sheath. So we have to see what those five sheaths are, what they're made of. The first sheath, just to say in advance, is the food sheath, annamaya kosha. Made of food, annamaya kosha. It's one, this body. The second sheath is the pranamaya kosha, the vital force that enlivens this body. That's number two. These are all sheaths. They're points of identification, right, where I take myself to be that. There's the manomaya kosha, that which consists just of the manas, the fluctuating mind, the negative emotions. You know, the production of the vrittis, that's manomaya kosha. Then vijnanamaya kosha, that's the fourth one, that's the buddhi. And then anandamaya kosha, that's the experience of ananda, the temporal experience of ananda, of happiness. These are five points of identification. I have to recognize the self, my being, differentiated from that. And so there are prakriyas that deal with the differentiation of the Atma, myself, from these five points of experience, points of identity. That's the second one. The third one is called sun, just means being. Being, the double na is sandhi. It's a sandhi rule. The doubling is a na. Avastatraya sakshi. That Atma is the sakshi, the witness of the three, the group of three, avastas. The avastas are the wake three states of experience, the triya, avasta triya, the three states of experience, waking, dream, deep sleep. So the sakshi, the one who is the witness of these three, this group of three, waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. This is a very important one because the dream state totally negates the waking state. It replaces it completely, including the waker. The dream character is different than the waking character. So the whole world gets displaced. And then in the deep sleep, there's no world at all. There's no subject-object. And yet, I am the self of all three. So that's a very important prakriya for this viveka that we have to put ourselves through. And then having given examples of these three very major prakriyas, he gives the positive. These are all negations. These prakriyas are a negation to show that you are to differentiate yourself from these points of identification. But then there has to be a positive assertion, you know. You negate everything that you've ever taken yourself to be and then you just left there. What? You know? Then who am I? Who am I then? So there is a positive assertion. that also has to be established. The positive assertion is Sat Chit Ananda Swarupaha. Your nature is Sat, existent being, which is itself Chit consciousness, which is itself Ananda, limitless, unencumbered nature of yourself. What we call Ananda. It's also called Ananta. That is your nature. That has to be unfolded because existence, which is consciousness, which is limitless, is something that is what is kind of left over after I negate all of these things. But I have to recognize that as myself. The one who is left over has to recognize, yeah, I am. My being has not been touched. And I am conscious being. I am consciousness. The conscious being that is me has not been touched. And I am not touched in any way by any of the limitations of these that have brought on these prakriyas, the three states of experience, the three bodies, the five koshas. These things don't touch or encumber me in any way. So all of these prakriyas have to be gone through in detail, but more than in detail, it has to be gone through each one in such a way that I can't but see it. That's why we have, these are prakriyas. This is, prakriyas are the teaching methodologies which are really the pramana. How do I gain this knowledge? I gain knowledge of this room because of my eyes. My eyes are the pramana, the means of knowledge for gaining, you know, understanding the knowledge of this room. How does the Upanishad give me that direct, immediate knowledge of my own nature, differentiated from this mithya, from these mistaken points of identity? Well, it has to first do a negation. Neti, neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not iti, not iti. It's not this, it is not this. I have to see clearly. You know, I have to have that experience. Yes, there's a subject-object relationship here. I am not the object that comes and goes. I have to see it very, very clearly. And then I have to see what's left over. I have to recognize the one who is me, disembodied from these false points of identity. So that is the goal, that is the teaching methodologies. They're all there in the Upanishads. And they've been passed down from beginningless time to give you the direct, immediate knowledge of yourself and of this creation. A direct, immediate knowledge, in fact, of what is the Satyam. Yeah. Atma is Satyam. Atma is the self, is what is. Everything else is mithya.
Shri Rupyo Namaha Hari Om.